to us is, this gham state with Sajjada is this inability to do anything for his father at that moment. Imagine, just imagine, if you see your brother, if you see your father, if you see your children laid out, and there is nothing we can do for them. Wallahi, it reminds me when Ali ibn al-Akbar comes to Imam al-Hussein and he says to him, Ya Abata al-Atashu qad qatalani. That this thirst is killing me. You know, the jawab of the Imam was what? The jawab was, my son, what you're saying to me is difficult to bear. It is difficult because I cannot fulfill it. Sajjad felt that same way. He could not fulfill it. But we say, Ya Sajjad, there is more you have to see after this. There is more difficulties you have to endure after this. You have to be taken to the courtyard of Yazid and see this mal'oon play with the stick on the teeth of... You have to be in the dungeons of Sham when a young 3-year-old child embraces the head of her father and kisses the lips of her father and then does not move. Oh Sajjad, you have to bury your sister in Sham. Oh Sajjad, you have to see your aunts and your sisters in chains and in prison. You know, it is said Abu Hamza al-Thamali comes to him and sees him crying. He says, Ila mataad al-buka sayyidi. Till when will you cry these tears? The Imam alayhi salam says, yes, I know that death for us is ordinary, that shahadat is an honor. But he says, Ya Aba Hamza, have you ever heard of women from the family of Rasulullah being taken as prisoners in this way? He says, by God, every time I see my aunt Zainab, every time I see my sisters, I can see them running from one tent to the running from one tent to the other as they tried to escape the fires. When the Imam alayhi salam was poisoned, and when the poison took over the life of our Imam, it is said Imam al-Baqir was giving ghusl on his father and he began to cry out loud. فَقِيلَ لَهُ مَا يُبْكِيكَ يَبْنَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ. What makes you cry, oh the grandson of Rasulullah? He says what? He says, Abki li ara min athar al jami'a. He says, as I was doing ghusl on the body of my father, I saw the marks of where chains and shackles were placed on the body of our Imam. Every day the Imam would be reminded of what. فسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
راحي كريم عاضي عليم حالي حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, my very dear sisters, welcome to Muslim Lady. The month of Muharram is already there, so I offer my condolences to every single one of you, and of course, Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. This is Asma, your humble host, and here with me, I have my very dear sister, Sister Sadiqah. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome to Muslim Lady.
Wa alaikum salam, and thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Of course, I'm in here. So, my dear listeners, we were discussing women and the importance of all the great ladies and the journey of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, and specifically in the history of Karbala. And we went through so much of his stuff related to Lady Zainab, salamullah alayha, and also all the women who have been participating in this history. Today we're going to shed more of lights upon those women who had done a great deal of job in this battlefield, actually. And maybe not much of us know a lot about them, but they had a great role hand in hand with Lady Zainab salamullah alayha. So they were helping her and backing her up.
So in this segment, because we've discussed, had an overview discussion on what the role women played in the event of Ashura, if we now start to look at very zoom in onto the women themselves, so apart from Hazrat Zainab alayhi salam, we had many other women who participated in perhaps shaping the event of Ashura.
Just before you go into the depth of the story and penetrate deep into the facts that you're going to share with us, there's a quote that says, behind every successful man, there is a great woman. And I think whatever that happened to men in Ashura, for some of them, was mostly related to their women.
Exactly. And you've touched on, and I believe you're referring to the wife of Zuhair.
Exactly.
Zuhair ibn Qayn.
Exactly, yes.
So Zuhair ibn Qayn, the story goes that Imam Hussein alayhi salam was between Mecca and Kufa.
Mm-hmm.
On the way, he comes across the caravan of Zuhair ibn Qayn.
Yeah.
So Zuhair tries to distance himself from the Imam. He doesn't want to be with the Imam at
this
point.
Exactly. He doesn't want to meet him face to face.
No. He doesn't want to support the Imam at this point.
Yeah.
At some point, they end up camping together. So Imam Hussein sends someone to Zuhair's camp. Zuhair is with his wife. And Imam Hussein's servant goes to him and tells him, Imam Hussein wants to meet you.
Yeah.
Zuhair is very distraught at this point. He doesn't want to go.
Exactly.
His wife looks at him and tells him, what has happened to you? The son of the prophet is calling you and you're sitting here.
And whatever she told him actually changed his destiny.
Yes. So listening to his wife, he goes to Imam Hussein.
Exactly.
He meets Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein invites him to his course.
She was his driving force.
Yes. And when he sees what Imam Hussein is doing and the reward of it in the hereafter, he goes back to his wife and tells her, I'm going with Imam Hussein and you're free to go back to your family. But when we see the role of his wife later,
she went with him.
Yeah, no, she didn't go with him. She did return back to her hometown. What did happen is that later, when the death happened, she was following the whole event. And when it did happen, she sent her servant to go cover the body of Zuhair in Karbala. Her servant goes to Karbala and he sees the body of Imam Hussein without a coffin. So he thinks to himself, how can I cover the body of Zuhair while the body of the son of the prophet is uncovered? So he goes and covers the body of Imam Hussein first.
Yes.
And he goes back to Zuhair's wife. The driving force behind Zuhair initially going towards Imam Hussein was his wife. And that is why we see a lot of times when you're looking for a spouse, you're always told, look for a spouse who's going to help you in your faith.
Exactly.
Someone who's going to be able to push you towards religion.
Strengthen your belief.
Exactly. And even if you choose to go on the wrong path, she's always going to be there to push you back.
Exactly.
And Zuhair's wife did exactly that. When she saw Zuhair was willing to go off, she pushed him towards Imam Hussein, and it ended up in him perhaps gaining one of the positions that we are told that the martyrs of Ashura will have a status so high on the Day of Judgment that all the other shuhada, all the other martyrs will be jealous of that position on the Day of Judgment.
Of course.
One position, one instance of a woman's push led to a man who perhaps would have left Imam Hussein, but he ended up being in the army of Imam Hussein.
Exactly. The story would have gone a different way.
And his destiny would have changed. But it was for his wife that he found path to his success in the hereafter.
Exactly. So just before we go into the other women, into the other great ladies that were in the story of Karbala, let's go for a little short break and we'll be back in no time. Thank you for staying tuned. Welcome back to Muslim Lady. This is Arab English Radio. We're discussing great ladies who participated in the battlefield of Karbala and actually the role they shared along with their husbands to save Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So sister, we were talking about the wife of Zuhair and we said that she was a driving force for him to change his destiny and the story totally upside down because he was ignoring the caravan of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. But then when he was asked to go and meet Imam, it was his wife that actually motivated him to go further. So this is just one woman. among all the women who shared plenty much of significance in the battlefield of Karbala.
Yes.
So let's go to the other one.
Another one that I'd like to look into is Hazrat Fidda. She was the one who had served in the household of the Prophet for a very long time, and she accompanied them according to some narrations in Karbala.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came to the court of Yazid in Damascus, modern-day Damascus, Yazid ordered the killing of Imam Sajjad, who was the only male surviving figure from the army of Imam Hussein, yeah, alayhi salam. And obviously he was the only male surviving because he was supposed to be the imam.
Exactly.
And when the order to kill him came about, Hazrat Zainab stood up to protect him. So they wanted to kill her as well. And this is where Hazrat Fidda stood up. And she said, if you need to kill them, you're going to kill me first. And the tribe of Hazrat Fidda stood up who were there. And they told her, if you want to kill her, you're going to have to come past us.
Very interesting.
And so her one stance...
Such great women.
This could possibly have led to her being killed.
Exactly.
But again, she realized that protecting the imam, there is no man and woman here.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has a responsibility because this is a divine responsibility that Allah has placed on the imam. And we have been given a responsibility to be with the imam and protect him when needed. And this could easily have led to her murder.
Exactly.
Rather, she stood up, protected the imam of her time. And because there was such tribalism in that time, even her tribe stood up to protect her,
mm-hmm,
which led to the imam of the time being protected.
Now, sister, there's a question. What happens to these women to turn into these very strong characters?
Because it comes down to the upbringing they have faced, the upbringing they have gotten from a very young age.
So again, mothers are very important.
Mothers are very important. And this, if we want to see how upbringing has an effect, we go to another woman, Umm al-Baneen.
Exactly.
Umm al-Baneen, she's known Umm al-Baneen because she had four children, four sons. All her four sons were killed in Karbala.
Yeah.
Now, Umm al-Baneen was a very pious
were
woman.
Were sacrificed for the love,
yes,
of Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
So Umm al-Baneen was the wife of Imam Ali alayhi salam. After Hazrat Fatima died, Imam Ali was looking for a woman from a courageous tribe.
Yeah.
And so he asks his brothers, who introduces her. Now, it is said that her name was Fatima as well.
Yeah.
But she never liked to be referred to as Fatima, according to what has been said, because she was afraid that the sons of Hazrat Fatima would remember their mother.
Hearing her name would,
exactly,
remember their mother, and then they would get sad.
Exactly. So in order to spare them that...
pain. The,
exactly,
pain of the loss that they have been undertaking.
So you can see that from her onset... She knew the role that she had to play as a... Even when she entered the house of Imam Ali alayhi salam, she entered as a follower of the imam, not as his wife only.
Yeah.
Even though being the wife of an imam has a great status. When she had her children, she had four children. The most famous of them is known as Hazrat Abbas. You see, the way she nurtured them to put the imam before themselves.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
The tribe that Umm al-Baneen came from was also related to the tribe that Shimr came from. It seems that they came from the same tribe. Now, this is important because in Karbala, the night before Ashura, it is the 9th of Muharram, Shimr goes to Hazrat Abbas and his other three brothers and tells them, we're giving an amanname, which is basically we're giving...
You're free to
treaty.
Go.
Yeah, we're giving you security. We come from the same
we're
tribe.
We're relatives.
Yeah. So we're giving you, leave the imam and you're free to go. We won't shed your blood.
Yeah.
And this is where the tarbiyah of Imam Umm al-Baneen comes in. Because
exactly.
She had taught them from a very young age to place the imam before themselves, even if it comes to their life.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks at them and tells them, keep your security to yourself. What do we have with this when the son of the Prophet has no security and you want to offer us security? And they're like, we don't need any security from you. We're going to stay with the son of the Prophet. And we know that the tarbiyah of Hazrat Abbas, alayhisalam, especially because his history has been focused on a lot, that in everything from a very young age, even if it came to fruits, he would look for the imam first before himself.
Yeah. His manner is very, very much famous everywhere.
Yes, he used to place himself in anything, whether it be water, fruits, or even his life. Yeah. It was always the imam first and me.
And that comes from the mother.
That comes from the way she brought them up from a young age.
Yeah.
To understand that the imam is a divine leader who has been appointed by Allah, and we have a responsibility to him. And that responsibility knows no boundaries. Your life, your wealth, your children
everything.
Have no value when it comes to the imam. Because when you attach yourself to the imam, you become the perfect human being. And we see that in Hazrat Abbas and the other women. Like even if you look
at... Yeah, a reflection of that,
yes,
actually.
Even if you look at the wife of Imam Hussein, who had understood the position of the
another
imam.
Another mother.
Another mother in Karbala. You know, her son was killed. She was a breastfeeding mother. Her son was 6 months old.
And her son was just 6 months.
Ali, but he's referred to as Ali Askar or Ali Arwadi, or some refer to him as Abdullah.
Yeah.
They're different names, but it refers to that six-month-old baby. And he takes him and tells him, if you do not want to have mercy on me, have mercy on the six-month child. So an arrow is pierced. And
those brutal creatures slaughtered that child on his father's hand.
So I've heard this from a reliable lecturer.
Yeah.
Who's also a teacher of the Hawza. And it says Rabab, who was the mother of the child, she knows the child has been killed. Now, she doesn't go to welcome the child.
Yeah.
She goes right to the end of the tent. And it says the only reason she went is that Imam Hussein does not feel any shame at that point. He has enough pain now. So you see the ma'rifah, the cognizance they had in them,
the
closeness.
Insight.
That understanding the head of the imam, it's like everyone was better than the other in this understanding.
Yes, exactly. It was like it was a competition.
Exactly. And it is, if you keep these women next to each other, you sort of fail to understand who's greater than the other.
Exactly, yeah.
Because of each one had a unique sacrifice.
Had a great sacrifice, yes. So thank you, sister. This is all the time we had for today's episode. We got familiar with so much of names of great women and ladies in the battlefield of Karbala who actually participated in that and contributed so much of things and actually had great sacrifices with their sons, with their husbands, with whatever they had in their hands. I hope you also enjoyed this session. Thank you for your attention. Until another session, I bid you farewell.
I know I'm waiting. Waiting for something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Qom Province, with an area of nearly 15,000 square kilometers, occupying less than 1% of the entire territory of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The province is linked to Tehran Province in the north, to Save, Tafresh, Ashtian, and Dilijan in Markazi Province in the south. It lies to the southeast of Isfahan, and from the east to Kabir Valley and Namak Lake. About one-fifth of the province is covered with mountains and foothills, with the remaining four-fifths a large valley or basin. The holy city of Qom is situated in the center of the province, close to the surrounding towns of Salafjagan, Khalajistan, Kahak, and Jafariyeh. Given its historic structures, discoveries of artifacts, and the recordings of historical documents, Qom was a reputable and relatively large city in the pre-Islamic era. When Islam was introduced to Iran, Qom developed rapidly and became semi-autonomous during the sovereign reign of the Bani Umayyah and Bani Abbas caliphates. Qom is home to the heavenly court, the historic mausoleum and shrine of Hazrat Ma'sumeh. also known as Fatime Masume, the daughter of Imam Musa Kazim, the seventh Imam of Shia Islam. Hazrat Masume is revered by Muslims worldwide, and so her resting place being in Qom lifted the dignity and status of the city and conferred religious significance upon it. Among the other notable tourist attractions in the province are the holy Jamkaran Mosque and more than 400 other Imamzades, offspring of imams, shrines, seminaries, theological schools, historically important mosques such as Friday, Imam Hassan, Babul Jannah, and Rafat, educational and international institutes, and Qomrud Lay. When the 7th Abbasid Caliph Ma'mun invited Imam Reza to Marv, Hazrat Masume moved to Iran in the company of a number of Shia Muslims to meet with and join Imam Reza. But just outside Qom, she was taken ill. In her 80s at the time, she was bedridden in Qom for 17 days before she passed away. Her body was buried in a well-respected place in the city of Bagh Babylon. Today, Bagh Babylon is famous because of Hazrat Masume's shrine that houses a magnificent monument. This stately edifice is one of the most important religious shrines of the Islamic world. The original shrine was built in the middle of the 3rd century Islam and was expanded substantially between the 4th and 6th centuries when a dome and artwork were added to it. Umm Azam Mosque, located right next to Hazrat Masume's mausoleum, is the city's Azam Mosque, known widely as Ayatollah Burujerdi's Azam Mosque. It was built in 1918 through the efforts of Sayyid Hossein Tabotabai Burujerdi. The architect of this splendid monument was a man named Hossein Lorzadeh. It is classified among the 3 largest veranda mosques. Its dome stands at 24 meters high. Today, the mosque is the Qom Seminary's most important teaching center. The mosque is now merged with Hazrat Masume's shrine. Recently, its dome was adorned with large thin flakes of lusterware, donated and produced under the supervision of Haj Hassan Jaber Ansari. The Tabotabai Mosque, spearheaded by Hujjatul Islam Agha Muhammad Tabotabai, the son of Ayatollah Haj Agha Hussein Qomi, a great mosque with an elevated dome was built adjacent to Hazrat Masume's mausoleum. Famously known as the Tabotabai Mosque, it was built between 1981 and 1991. In the 10th century Islamic era, Shah Tahmasp Safavi used bricks to build the first sepulchre on the mosque. Sometime later, an additional sepulchre made of transparent white steel was installed around the original sepulchre and a wooden door was fitted in the northern frontage. In the 13th century Islamic era, Fath Ali Shah Qajar replaced this door with a luxurious golden door. He also upgraded the sepulchre by having it coated with layers of silver and installed on a malachite pillar. With time, the sepulchre lost its radiance, so in the 14th century in Islamic era, it was again renovated. Finally, in 1973, the form of the sepulchres was altered and its height increased. Thank you. Fateh Shah Qajar had the shrine flagstone with marble. He believed the spiritual gusts around Hazrat Masume's shrine has to step on the best of stones. Atiq Courtyard. In the 10th century in the Islamic era, Shah Begum Khatun, the daughter of Shah Ismail Safavi, built a square-form courtyard with three verandas. Later, Fateh Ali Shah had it remodeled into an irregular octagonal shape. This octagonal form is said to have been built on the memorial of Imam Reza Thamanul Hujaj, the brother of this holy woman, pointing to the fact that Imam Reza was the 8th Shia Imam. Gradually, the number of verandas in the courtyard increased. At the moment, it has 7 of them, 4 on the south side and 3 on the north. The verandas of the Atiq courtyard are the most famous within this court. They were built on the order of Shah Begum and gilded during the reign of Fateh Ali Shah Qajar. They constitute the entrance of the heavenly courtyard. Atop each veranda, a hadith inscription in white thulf is displayed on an azure background. Above it, a myriad of tiles and inscriptions. Imam Khomeini Great Sanctuary. It is one of the greatest architectural feats after the 1979 Islamic Revolution, featuring a multitude of porches, entrances, and other facilities. Called Balasar, overhead mosque, it is situated nearby and overhead to Hazrat Masume's shrine. That's where it draws its name. In the Safavid period, it served as a motel. Inside the shrine and next to the holy tomb of Hazrat Masume, a mausoleum houses the eternal resting places of grand ayatollahs, scholars, and outstanding scientific and religious figures, the largest grouping of revered Muslims anywhere, particularly in the Shia world. Qum is called Darul Aman. Some of the renowned and compassionate scholars buried in the mausoleum here are Allamez Tabatabai, Khansari, Golpayegani, and Bahjat. The martyr of love and writing and eminent ideologist Murtaza Mutahhari is also buried here. In the INM mirror courtyard of the Holy Shrine lies the mausoleum of freedom crusader Sheikh Fazlullah Nuri, born in 1843 and killed in 1909. Sheikh Nuri's memorial is symbolic among the liberal crusaders of constitutionalism. This is the tomb of martyr Ayatollah Dr. Mufatteh. He was born in 1889 and martyred in 1939. The Faizia Theological School was founded in the Middle Ages of Islamic history and is located in Qom next to Hazrat Masuma Shrine in Astane Muqaddase, Holy Threshold Square. It was registered as a national heritage in 2007. Astane School was replaced by Faizia School in the first half of the 13th Islamic century. According to valid historical documents, the school was established in the middle of the 6th Islamic century and was renovated in the Safavid era. The two-story building features four verandas. The 40 chambers on the first floor were built in the Qajar period, and the other 40 on the second floor were built in the 14th Islamic century. The oldest part of the seminary is where the southern veranda is and is decorated with beautiful tiles belonging to the Safavid era of 1939 AH. It is regarded as the gateway to the Atir courtyard and Hazrat Masuma's shrine. The Museum of Astane Muqaddase, the Holy Threshold, is one of the oldest in the country, constructed in 1935 inside the Holy Shrine of the Martyr Mutahhari Mosque. Its curatorial activities continued until 1974. Located in Astane Square, the museum building was built a couple of years after the Islamic Revolution in Iran. Originally, it covered an area of 500 square meters, but in 1992, the building's basement was added to the museum, increasing its total usable area to 1,000 square meters. The oldest Quran in the museum dates back to 819 AD and bears the name of Ma'mun Abbasi on the first page. Some of the Qur'ans are written on animal skin, some on fabric, and the rest on paper. The collection within the museum has various parts and includes handwritten Qur'ans from the 2nd Islamic century to those written in the contemporary period, coins from Islamic and pre-Islamic eras, painted tabloids and miniatures, wooden works of art including marquetry and parquetry, terracotta, bowls, glass bowls and golden inlaid tiles with designs and beautiful inscriptions belonging to the 6th and 8th Islamic centuries, stone masonry works and decorative stones, metal instruments and engravings, hand-woven silk carpets from the Safavid and Qajar eras, and hand-woven fabric. Samples of expensive marquetry are kept in the Museum of Aston e Mogadesse in Rome. One such sample is a rare marquetry door belonging to the Qajar period, built when Nasiruddin Shah Qajar was in power and Mirza Taghi Khan Amir Kabir was vizier, and forms part of the tomb of Muhammad Shah Qajar. Another marquetry piece from the Qajar period, with inscriptions of famous poems by Muhtasham Kashani describing Ashura in Nastaliq calligraphy, are engraved beautifully on bones. The Chehel Akhtaran Shrine in Qom. The mausoleum of Musa Mubarqa, son of Imam Muhammad Taghi, and other offspring of the Imam. That's why the large courtyard of this collection contains three popular shrines, the Musa Mubarqa, the Chehel Akhtaran, and the Imamzade Zayd. The monument was built in 1571. Ordered by Shah Tahmasp Safavid, it was designed by Master Sultan Rumi, who was amongst the most famous architects of the Safavid era. His name is recorded in the shrine. In 1574 AD, the building's roof was renovated with brick. The ceiling is very high. A number of Sayyids and offspring of Imams are buried here. They include the sons and offspring of Imam Musa Mubarak. It is said that a total of 40 men, 40 women, and 25 children are entombed in this shrine. The library of Ayatollah Marashi Najafi. Sayyid Shahabuddin Husseini Marashi Najafi was born in 1897 in Najaf and passed away in 1990 at the age of 93. He led a frugal existence. He is famous for salvaging thousands of rare and lost Islamic books at his own expense. His library holds the world's largest collection of Shia manuscripts. The oldest undated manuscript in this library is the pages of the Holy Quran written in Kufi, going back to the 2nd and 3rd Islamic centuries. And the oldest dated manuscript is two parts of the Quran written in Kufi by Ali ibn Hilal in Baghdad in 1013. There is also a golden page of the Holy Quran in the collection bearing Imam Reza's handwriting. Now the manuscripts of the library number 60,000, 65% of them in Arabic and the rest in Persian, Turkish, Urdu, Tartari, Hibachi, Pahlavi, and Latin. Annually, between 750 and 1,000 manuscripts are added to this library. Marashi Najafi wrote more than 148 books, dissertations, and papers in his lifetime. Most of them are yet to be published. Qom's traditional bazaar, scented with perfumes, has played host to travelers from far and wide who come here to buy souvenirs such as sohan, mohrs, prayer stones, and sajadehs or prayer mats. The aroma of fresh sohan, made next to the retail shops,
draws every tourist and pilgrim to itself. Om's Grand Bazaar houses a beautiful historical monument located near the mausoleum of Hazrat Masumeh. It bears the hallmarks of the Qajar era architectural style and was registered as a National Heritage Site in 1997. The building has two floors with 12 chambers. It used to have long cloth sashes that are now mostly ruined. Above the chambers and the vaulted corners is chalk architecture. The roof of the shopping center has three openings, and the middle section opens up to a height of 15 meters. The market has an arched roof, considered the largest in Iran. The monument was designed and executed by Master Hussein Romi in 1882. Custodianship of the monument was granted to Sayyid Mahmoud Tabatabai, a recognized businessman in Qom and the father of Sayyid Hussein Tabatabai. The mosque in the old square of Qom is 900 years old, and atop its fine architecture is the first minaret and dome built in Iran and the third in the Islamic world. It is an octangular-shaped monument with a dome and two pyramid-shaped covers on top. It was built during the rule of the Qajar dynasty at the beginning of the 18th Islamic century. Later, a veranda and some other monuments were added to it. The shrine of Imam Ali ibn Ja'far, after Astana Muqaddase, transcends all other monuments and mausoleums of Qom province in terms of spectacular decorations. One of the most important features of this splendid shrine is its plasterwork, which is among the most outstanding artistic works of the 8th Islamic century. There are 94 pieces of gold inlaid tiles on the monument showing plant, animal, and human designs. Naskh inscriptions containing Quranic verses and religious stories and Persian literature are among other unique decorations of the shrine, while other inscriptions and decorations are common throughout Iran and in museums around the world. The gold inlaid altar of this monument, situated at the southern end of the shrine, was built in 734 AH. It is one of the greatest artistic works of its time. Today, this altar has pride of place at the Islamic Era Museum in Iran's National Museum. Jamkaran Mosque, where Shia Muslims believe that Muhammad al-Mahdi, the hidden 12th Imam, who will lead the world to an era of universal peace, once appeared and offered prayers. The mosque is located on the Qom-Kashan Road, 6 kilometers outside the city of Qom. According to Muhaddith Nuri, a contemporary religious scholar, the foundation of this mosque is credited to a man named Hassan ibn Muthle Jamkarani, who was contracted to build the mosque upon the request of the 12th Imam. On Wednesday evenings, and especially on the 15th night of Sha'ban, Imam Zaman's birthday, Shia Muslims come here to pray. Imam Hassan Askari Mosque. Also located in Qom near Ali Khani Bridge and next to Astana Street, is the monument of the 11th Shia Imam Hassan Askari. It used to be called the Atiq Friday Prayer Mosque. According to various accounts, it was built by the Imam's representative, Ahmad ibn Ishaq Ash'ari, in the 3rd Islamic century. Since then, this monument has been renovated several times. Today, the oldest part of the monument is its southern veranda, built in 1750. The Imam Hassan Mosque has always been held in high esteem. Since the 9th Islamic century, the custodians of Astana Muqaddase have been taking care of this mosque. Rebuilt in the final years of the Safavid period, today only the southern veranda remains standing. The monument sustained extensive damage during the Qajar era flooding. At the end of Worms Chahar Mardan Street and inside a small garden called Baghe Gombad Sabz, the Green Dome Garden, there are three historical monuments, relics from the 8th Islamic century. It is known as the Kashan Entrance. According to available historical documents, the two domes of this site are the tombs of the rulers of the Ali Safi House, independent sovereigns of Qom. The inscription on the third dome has been destroyed, so no one knows when it was made and who made it. But going by documents from various sources, this third dome, historically speaking, dates back to the same period and probably also belongs to one of the members of the Ali Safi House. The people of Qom call this collection of mausoleums Sa'd, Sa'id, and Mas'ud, the three senior Ash'ari Arabs that revitalized Qom during their time. The plaster work at these three monuments is one of a kind. 1. The tomb tower of Khaje Asiluddin, representing the tomb of two rulers of the Safi house in 761 AH. 2. The tomb tower of Khaje Ali Sali, representing the tomb of three rulers of the Safi house in 792 AH. And 3. The northern tomb tower belonging to the late 8th and early 9th Islamic centuries. The tombs at the Green Dome Garden were registered on the National Heritage List in 1931. The tomb towers located in the garden include a southern dome, a middle dome, and a northern dome. From among the valuable remembrances of Persian architecture are the old caravanserais, built in the past eras in a different communicative, economic, military, geographical, and religious environment, and then gradually over time developed and expanded. 2 kilometers from Mahmudabad village stands a clay castle on the edge of Qom Road. In the north of the village there are 2 castles, one a famous stone castle and Islamic monument, and the other called the clay castle is made of mud. It is located north of Sefid Kuh, White Mountain, in the lower northern region of Qom province. According to collected documents, this castle dates back to the Ashkani era and was inhabited in successive historical periods. The castle is 45 meters long and 29.5 meters wide, with walls of various heights but not higher than 10 meters. The castle may have served as a protective outpost monitoring travelers entering via Varamin and the fringe of Ray into the Qom district. It would have been portrayed as the landmark entrance to the city. Stone Caravanserai. This caravanserai is located on the Qom Road, 35 kilometers from Qom City. It is a 4-veranda caravanserai which lies in ruin and belongs to the Safavid period. The construction material used is mainly stone and has 4 semicircle-shaped towers on the western and eastern sides. Qom owes most of its global recognition to the holy shrine of Hazrat Ma'sumeh, which glitters like a diamond sitting in the middle of the city and every year attracts a large number of pilgrims. It is the smallest province of Iran, but is conveniently situated on the main interstate highway linking several major cities.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wa salatu wa salamu ala sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
My name is Sheikh Zaid Al-Salami.
A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatihul Hayat, written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma, Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. How we are able to understand our daily routine as far as our relationship with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and how we are able to not only attain sustenance and rizq, but also benefit on a spiritual, social, and moral level. The same way that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Holy Quran mentions that He has divided the year into the Hijri year into 12 months, the same way as He has appointed certain times as holy, like Layal al-Qadr, for example, the same process of Almighty God allocating certain individuals and certain pieces of land on this earth as holy. We also understand that as far as our daily routine is concerned, it's important for us to find ways of improving the quality of that particular day. And there are many of these kind of ahadith that speak about, you know, how to stay away from nahs or sa'atu nahs and these kind of issues. Important thing is, here there is a necessity, an akhlaqi necessity in our adab in Islam for you to continue to pay sadaqah and do dua before you pay sadaqah, do dua after you pay sadaqah. Whatever you do, even when it comes to your whole, this whole process of working and wanting to do something for that day, you know, have some kind of policy. Let's say I work 20 days in a month. 3 of these days, the income for 3 of these days, I'm going to give as charity. I'm going to give to the masjid. I'm going to give for Imam Hussein. I'm going to have majalis of Imam Hussein. Whatever, like any kind of idea. I want to contribute to a sadaqah jariyah. You know, that means that you are working at really as a mujahid. As we said, al-mujahid, al-kada ala ayalihi, kal-mujahid fi sabilillah. But if you are wasting all of your energy only for dunyawi gains, for you to buy another house and a better car and another trip and another this and another that, then what kind of jihad are you doing? Okay, we understand that there are good days, as we mentioned, you know, of course, without doubt, the blessed wiladat of our ma'sumin, salamullahi alayhim, are going to be the best days, especially when it comes to something like a marriage, especially when it comes to something like a wedding celebration. These are beautiful days that you should use and seize that opportunity in doing something about it. If you don't have a certain kind of marriage or whatnot, then celebrate it. If you can't celebrate it in the masjid or in the Husseiniyah, celebrate it at home. Have some kind of, you know, regular program that you have, you know, that you, okay, well, you read Hadith al-Kisa, you read the ziyarah of that ma'asum for that day, you turn on some candles, you give out some halawiyat, some sweets and food for your family members and your neighbors, you know, just so you, that whole environment, the atmosphere at home, it becomes a blessed atmosphere, an atmosphere where dhikru ahl al-bayt alayhi salam is prioritized.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است چه فرون دماغ این قصاب داره فرون روزون
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اون اینه که فرون درخت کاری اینجا کم سواب داره دعا هم داره سواب هم داره
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره
امام has mentioned both of these subjects. The very imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also